Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carriad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast. Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. I know we are very close to the holiday festive Christmas time if you celebrate. So if that is really shit for you, I'm so sorry. I hope you're doing as okay as you can be. Sometimes it's just shit and there's nothing we can do but just get through it. As I mentioned a while ago, Julia Samuel has been sharing some amazing stuff on Instagram about getting through the holiday season. So my heart goes to you if you're feeling awful right now. And remember, as I say every week, it counts if I say at the beginning or the end, you are not alone. This is the last episode of this season. Thank you so much for your amazing comments and your brilliant rates and reviews that you've done and your lovely tweets and Instagrams. I hugely, hugely appreciate it. It is only possible that I get to do this show thanks to people listening to it and just responding so amazingly. And I know we've had such an amazing season of guests and I will be back next year at some point. I'm not entirely sure when I will be. So just follow at the Griefcast on Twitter and Instagram. I will announce when we have the new series ready to go. But until then, thank you so much for listening. This week I'm talking to the incredible Yersa Daly Ward. Yersa is a writer, a model, an actor. She's also a poet. She's also known for working with Beyoncé on the Black is King musical film that Beyoncé made, which is incredible if you haven't seen it. She has a new book out called The How, Notes on the Great Work of Meeting Yourself, which is really, really beautiful. I really recommend it, especially if you're feeling, I don't know, a bit like, how am I going to get through the next year? what do I want? Who am I? It's that sort of book, but it's written so beautifully. And it's very heartfelt and thoughtful. I really enjoyed reading it. Yersa spoke to me about two griefs she'd experienced. Her mum, who passed away 14 years ago, and her grandmother, who passed away this year. Congratulations. It is a beautiful book. Oh my goodness. I felt like I wanted to frame it. I was like, this isn't a book you just like shove in your bag. I was like, this is a beautiful thing. Like this needs to be, I want to be sat like on, you know, some rolling hills with like a scone or something. This deserves like I was like reading it on the tube, but I was like, this doesn't, like, this is too nice to be reading on the tube. But yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. That is so lovely. That's praise indeed. I love that. Thank you.
Oh, good. So, so who are we remembering today?
Well, you know, it's funny, Carrier, because when I initially knew I was coming on here, there was no question. It was my mother, which has been, you know, that was the most significant loss of my life. And then in April, my grandma passed away. And that was,
oh, that, that, gosh.
Yeah, and that was interesting too, but in a completely different way. So I think it is my mother that I'm going to talk about. But yeah, it's interesting because you think of your grandmother's kind of the mother of the mother, and then it set off this all of these thoughts that I've just been, you know, when I write, I think about it quite a lot.
So was that your mum's mum?
It was. It was.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's an interesting, like, yes. Very. Lost the parent. And then that next, the older generation, who normally people would not lose in that order. So.
For sure.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
So what was your mum's name?
My mum's name was Marcia Daly Ward. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
And how long ago was it that she passed away?
You know what? It's been, and it's so funny because people ask me this and I always get stuck on this sort of 11 years, but it's actually more like, it's actually 13 years now.
Yeah.
It's funny how the years just go on and there you are. You're still with this memory sort of crisp and intact in a lot of different ways.
I found 20 very significant. Like, that for me was like, I couldn't. And now when people say how long is it, I'm like, oh, it's 20 something. Like, that's irrelevant to me. I just know that the 20 was like a real kind of like, felt like my skin burnt off again and I had to kind of re-grieve a lot of stuff. And so now I'm like, God, how, 23, 20? I'm like, but 20 was so important, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I can relate to like these significant numbers that you don't know why sort of drop in your field of grief almost, don't they, and like as if they're like really there, you can see that number and you're like, wow, that's all I can see is 11 or 13.
That's so true. And I think it's really interesting that you said, you know, after that 20 years, a different you is grieving, so it's almost like you have to re-grieve as the person you are because it changes and maybe what you miss or what you feel has been lost changes as well according to your needs at the time.
Definitely. I think, I mean, they call it, it's sort of known as secondary griefs is the technical term, which is like, obviously you grieve the person and there's all that other stuff around it. Like maybe you grieve the loss of like, you know, having a home to go back to or like, and I think that's what, as you get older, the secondary griefs change. Like you said, your needs change. And so new things arrive. You're like, oh, I didn't think I'd be bothered about that. Now I'm bothered about that. And other stuff that used to matter so much, you're like, oh, yeah, I've got used to that not being there.
Yeah.
So how old were you when she died?
So I was 22 when my mum died.
Oh, that's young. And that's really young.
It was such a weird experience. It was such a weird experience. And for so many reasons, I was actually engaged. I was engaged when my mum died, and I remember one of the last conversations I had with my mum being about this engagement and how I felt about it, and then I didn't end up marrying the man.
Wow, that's interesting, isn't it? What the person they were talking to then, and obviously, I mean, obviously, as anyone listens to the show knows, like, grief changes you so fundamentally.
Wow.
So, yeah. So you were 22. What did she die of?
So my mum died of breast cancer, which she was battling for a really... I want to say it was probably getting on to 8 years, something like that.
Wow.
She was in remission and then it came back. And... it was strange because when she died, she actually was in a hospice. But whether or not it was through not really wanting to believe it was still a shock when it happened because she'd been to that hospice before and pulled through. So when it happened, we were like, ooh, it was just a huge... I think shock is a strange word for it because it was much more sort of gentle but absolute... you know?
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Because I've spoken to so many people and even though somebody, you know, you get the extreme end of it, which is, you know, a phone call in the middle of the night, someone has no idea. And obviously that's very shocking. But even all of us who've had to deal with cancer or terminal illness, even though you know, it's still a shock.
It really
is. It's still
a
shock because the crossover point of alive to dead, you can, you know, sometimes people say to me, oh, I'm already grieving, you know, they're not dead yet, but I feel like I'm prepared for it. And I think,
yeah. it's a totally different thing.
It's so different because it's so fine that once the door is really closed, like, that's a whole different world.
It really is.
So I'm not surprised that you were shocked.
Yeah, and we sort of grieve in layers as well, don't we? The body does so much to kind of protect you at certain times. Like with my mum, it was me who did the funeral and everything. I'm the only girl and I'm the one that my mum sort of left as the executor. I have an older brother and a younger brother. But my mum was like, we'll make sure everything is done.
Oh, thanks, mum. Yep.
But something about that just... It was good for me because I had to worry about, you know, finding the coffin that I thought was right. And I had to worry about the catering, you know, in black, particularly like Jamaican funerals, the food matters, you know.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, where are we going to get a jerk chicken from? Who's going to do the rice and peas? But there was something about that pulled me up and through it because I had to do all that. And I kind of thank God for that because I didn't, you know, I of course was grieving, but it was a very like roll your sleeves up and get on with it. It was me and my grandma actually who did the whole thing. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Did you speak at the funeral?
At the funeral, I did not speak, which is odd for me because of poetry and everything like that. But I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't want to. I wanted to be there. And we were at the front. And yeah, I was just soaking it all in. Her best friend spoke and it was really beautiful. And yeah, I'm glad I needed to just be there in it. And to say goodbye in that way. And also to sit next to my little brother who was only 17. I just wanted to be present.
I think it's I mean, 22 is really young. 17, I mean, it's all young. You're not in adulthood yet, I would say. You're sort of emerging, aren't you, at 22?
Yeah, very much.
And were you writing at that point? Like, did she know that you wanted to write poetry and stuff like that?
Absolutely. My mum was just such a champion of everything like that. And it's really her. I mean, she's the reason that I learned to read at such a young age. She read with me. She read with me when I had a strong reading ability and sort of facility with language at like 2.5, 3, which was unheard of. And it was because she read to me from being a baby, and so I could recognize words and start to piece things together. But that's why I'm a writer. It's all I've ever thought of. I've done other things as I got older, but that's been the thing that means the most to me and the way I communicate.
What, if you don't mind me asking, what happened with, you said the engagement broke off. Like, what happened? Is it kind of, did you feel the grief sort of ricocheted between that relationship?
This is going to sound so strange, but I knew it wasn't going to work out. And my last conversation with my mom, she was in the hospice and we were on the phone, and it was that kind of conversation where I was like, oh, mom, I don't really know about this because me and him are so different. And I don't know. My mum said, well, you know, you can teach him this and you can teach. I was thinking, I'm not sure that I want to do that. But I mean, he was wonderful, a really incredible person, but it just wasn't right. And I was 22, you know, and that last conversation was me just like sounding it out with her and talking about it. But I knew, but something about my mum dying, I'm sure we'll get to this, it did something to me. It made me, there was the grief of it and there was the horror of it, and it was so hard for so many years, but it gave me a fearlessness, an absolute fearlessness. And I knew that I could end that relationship and it wouldn't be the end, because I knew that I could do anything. She told me in dying was that life is so short. She was just 50. Life is so short, so just do the thing that you sort of need to do and want to do. And if you feel something isn't right, as much as you might love that person, you don't have to stay. I knew it in the instant, and that's how I lived my life after she was gone. I went off to live in South Africa for a bit. There was nothing to keep me there, you know, apart from my little brother. there, I just felt like I could go for anything I wanted to.
Yeah, that's come up a lot on the show of like this weird, like, not quite drive, but this thing that happens to you after a death, yeah, where you said you become fearless.
You do.
Because what's the worst that can fucking happen?
It's like, so true.
You're like, and I was in, I remember, well, actually, no, I wasn't in a relationship when my dad died. I was only 15. And then I remember breaking up with someone, a sort of significant relationship a few years later, and he was very upset. And I just couldn't fathom it because I was like, but I'm not dead. And I was so harsh. And I remember my friends being like, yeah, but he's upset. And me being like, yeah, but we're not dead. Like, to me, I was like, yes, this is sad. Yes, this is not what we want, but we're not dead. Like, that is, once you've seen death up close, it's just, sure, like you said, it just makes everything else just seem very simple. It's like either this is good or it's not, and I shouldn't be doing it. But it's hard when you're in that space, isn't it? Because like the, yeah, rest of the world is like, whoa, I'm not in that intense space that you're living in.
It's true. It does put things into perspective, doesn't it? And I suppose if you're going through it, it can seem very extreme to somebody else. But yes, it's like, come on, you know, it's not the end. We'll just keep, you know, we'll do all these wild things and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I think that when you have sort of weathered really difficult things like this, it becomes easier for me. I'll just speak from my experience, not to sweat that small stuff, just because you know what's really at stake here, and how many things can exist in a life, and how important it is to use your life, you know, wield it and do something wonderful with it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, when somebody, like you said, 50 is so young, it's just, it does give you that, oh, fuck it. Oh, I can't think of a more eloquent way to put it. I'm sure you could, yes. My extent of my vocabulary limits to fuck it. Because it's just, yeah, it's, I mean, obviously, it's, you know, it's sad when people die. It's sad, and it's sad when older people die. But there is something about a life not lived, a life cut short, you know, not getting to that bit. Did you speak to your grandma about it a lot? How was she able to communicate? Was she very, how was her grief?
Well, my grandma was, my goodness, my grandma was one of the most stoic Jamaican grandmas ever. I never saw my grandma cry. I saw my grandma bury two children and one sister. So she buried my mum, she buried my mum's brother, and she buried her sister. And my grandma just stood there and was getting on with just, it's so strange. And I didn't used to have any reference for it. And used to think, God, she's so hard and so, it's so great, so regal and so hard. Mm. And then I found myself like sort of in my 30s now, sort of emulating some of my grandma's behaviour. And I'm like, I never thought I was like this, but there is a resilience that she had. I mean, I'm not nowhere near, but there's a resilience that she had that, I mean, she raised me for a big section of my life as well. I will say that. They raised me, my grandparents raised me from 6 to about 11 or 12. And wow, I got so much from them. They were very strict Seventh-day Adventists. It was like religious fundamentalist belief. And yeah, very Jamaican and very tough. And yeah, I used to think I was nothing like them, but it's not true at all. As I get older, I get more and more.
What have you noticed? Is there something you do and you're like, oh my God, that's my grandma.
Like, I had so many things. It's so strange. So I used to be quite messy. I used to be messy up until I would say about 2 years ago. And then I don't like to have things out of place. My grandma could cook better than anybody I know. And now I realise I don't cook a lot for myself. I'm in and out. But when there's a lot of people there, or when I have just one other person in, I'm cooking for morning, noon and night, like going out, buying herbs, buying like, I don't know who I am. I'm buying like herbs from the market and being like, oh, I wonder what I'll do with this. I might do something with these bay leaves tonight. Who is that? I thought I didn't know how to cook, but it's just something that just appeared. And also my grandma and my mum's love for flowers and nature, which sprung up inside me about like 3 to 4 years ago. And it's insane. Yeah.
So strange, isn't it? It's so strange.
It really is.
It's just part of getting older. My friend said the other day, she was like, she's a bit younger than me and another friend, and we were discussing gardening in depth and what we'd planted. And my friend just looked at us both and was like, when does it happen? Like, what age am I going to get? We were like, oh, I think you pass 35. I think it just... But it's not true for everybody, obviously. But yeah, this way that, like you said, you... I guess it's part of maturing, isn't it? And when you have lost somebody, but when you've lost that person, it becomes a bit more heightened, maybe, because... you don't have them to rebel against or be like, oh, I'm not like you. So you start, you sort of flourish into it a little bit more because you're like, oh, yeah, that's what they did. I get to do that now. Like, it's a sort of bittersweetness to it, maybe.
That's so true. You do, and I'm learning to love it. This thing that the women in my family who have now gone have, it's almost like they've left something in me. And, you know, at times when I feel lonely or... you feel far away because I'm the only one of my family living all the way in New York, it gives me a lot of comfort that this is a thing, and this is actually a thing from my mom, or this is a thing from my grandma who I thought I wasn't that close to.
Yeah. How did you how did you find sort of processing the grief through your 20s? Like,
I think I must have tried every single way to feel it and not feel it. It's strange because I am not someone who hides from my emotions, but I do hide them, you know. So it's a tricky thing. Sometimes I'll know how I feel about something, but not necessarily express it. And that's because of so many reasons. My family were like that. I'm just like that. I was brought up in England, you know. All of those things, but. I mean, there were some moments, especially with my mum, and I felt so alone in the world, so alone in the world when she passed. And I mean, I'm so grateful, kind of even for those feelings now, because it, as you've said on this podcast before, things like the commonality of pain between humans, those are the things that bind us together, you know.
Yeah. It's a big question because I can't really remember what I did with my grief in my 20s. I just know I struggled with it a lot. And it's just that, like, you're just sort of carrying it, aren't you? And that's it. How did you feel? Because this is, I'm only asking, other guests have talked about this, that as you did well, as things started, you know, you become a writer. You don't want to be a writer. You are a writer and people are celebrating your work. How was that when you're sort of becoming the person that they didn't get to see?
It's so funny that you would ask me that, because even now, and even though I think... I feel really good when I think about my mum, and I would say for the most part, it's a positive feeling, you know, even in the grief, it's like a positive feeling when I think about her now. There are those days when I think, oh my God, I wish she was here to see this. Like, oh my God, I wish there was somebody old, like an older woman to speak to. And that moves me to action. That just makes me think, oh, okay, maybe I need older women in my life. As so many things, you know, as mentors. And family is really important in a way that I'm only just starting to understand. And again, it's a kind of a maturity thing. But yeah, there are so many ways in which even her behaviour, like some of her behaviours, are just so clear to me, that things that I didn't understand when I was younger and didn't have a place in which to put it. Now I do, because I'm nearing that age that she was at when I was a kid. And I'm the age now that I remember my mum being, you know, in the height of the motherhood. Yeah. And that is so interesting for the brain.
Yeah. How are you feeling that then, as you, like you said, I know exactly what you mean when you say like the height of motherhood. My mum was also, like the age I am now. And I really remember being a mum and doing all mum, and that, like, they're the centre of your world, aren't they? And you know, they're the sun, and you do whatever they say, and then you slowly get older and you're like, hang on a minute, hang on a minute. But yeah, how is that? Do you have a sort of, I wonder what it's like, because your life is obviously so different to where she was at that point.
It really like how is. Well, it does. It also makes me think, if my mum were alive, would I have done things differently? And the truth is yes. The truth is yes. There are some things that would have meant more to me, I think, having a mother to see it. And now it's not that, oh, it's terrible because she's not here and I don't get to see it. I don't get to experience it with her. I tend to look at it as this. It's, okay, so she's not here. So now I do something slightly different. And it's just like a parallel line. But I think, especially when it comes to celebration, I've had to get really good at mothering myself in terms of really when something happens, if I have like a career milestone, unfortunately, it's really easy for me to be like, okay, and on to the next, and not really sit in, not sit in it and not celebrate, because I think, well, there's no one to celebrate with. So, you know, so recently I've had to say, oh no, you're going to do this because, and even if it's just you, even if it's just you and you, I do something actually, and I will say, even though I'm not amazing at celebrating yet, I do this, and I have done this since my mum died. Every year on her birthday, which is June the 25th, I do something. So even if I have to, even before I was a writer, I do something so decadent. So it'll be like a spa day, or I'll buy myself a beautiful coat, or I'll do something that I really would have wanted to gift my mum with, because growing up, we didn't have a lot of money. And, you know, my mum didn't have those things that I would have liked her to have. And so I do something for myself, believing that in a way she's in me, that is just so luxurious, you know, and according to scale, you know, according to what I can do at the time. But yeah, I do something decadent, and I'm just like, yes, Marcia would love this. So this is what I'm going to do. And it's every 20, whether it's staying in a hotel, whatever, you know, and every June the 25th that happens.
I think that's so nice. And I do, because like on the Griefcast Twitter, people often get in touch and they're like, oh, I've got an anniversary coming up, or but like, what should I do? And my advice is always like, either do something that makes you massively happy, or do something that you think they would have liked. Like, that's the only way you're going to enjoy it. And then people often, you know, I'll retweet it and everyone's like, oh yeah, like, you know, just whatever you think they would have loved to do. And I can understand it's quite hard when you're at the beginning of the journey to think, oh, it'll be so sad because they won't be there. But eventually, yeah, there's a kind of, the way you're describing it, it's a kind of like joy to it of doing something you think, oh, they would have loved this. Like, and here I am doing it because I'm still here. I'm still alive. So there's no point me acting like I don't breathe, like I do. So let's at least, I think that's amazing to do something really mothery and decadent. I think that's lovely because it is... It's, you know, obviously mothers and fathers, and I know it's a very gendered idea, and obviously we're moving into a point where that doesn't seem so relevant, but the idea of losing that mother voice in your life and losing, like you said, someone to celebrate things, I think is really important to acknowledge. And I've had that with, you know, losing the dad side in my life, and it's just different energy. It's not, you know, and obviously some people might have a dad who feels more like a mum, or what, you know, it doesn't, it's just the only terms we currently have. But I think it's really, that's really important to try and sprinkle some joy into these, into this, what is sadness, but there's nothing you can do about the sadness. So you know, you have to kind of find your way to hold the sadness. And that's what I mean. It's not like sweep away the sadness. It's not like, oh, we're absolutely happy. You're not, but it's just trying to, do something that you think, they would have liked this. And it's such a nice idea to get to the point where you can do that, you know, and you can make yourself do that. I think that's so important. That's such a healthy way of dealing with it.
Yeah, and it's at the moment, it's I do more on that day than I do on my own birthday. But it's interesting what you said, because sadness is not just, it's not just one thing. It can be part of a larger experience that can be actually quite beautiful.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
That, I think, is the biggest lesson of grief I've had to learn, that I always saw it as either I'm fine or I'm sad. Either I'm weeping and it's awful, or I'm fine. And understanding, like, it isn't that simple. Like, that's not how brains work. That's not how grief works. Like you said, sometimes you can be sad and you start laughing, or you can be having a really joyful moment, but you feel that sudden, like, oh gosh, like they're not here, and then it passes. It's just trying to let whatever is there be there and not, I guess, give it labels, but it's hard not to because it's confusing.
And it's such a rich, rich tapestry. I remember in the church hall, like, so I'd instructed the funeral director,
yeah,
what to do. And, you know, in the church, I didn't want the casket to be open. So traditionally, like at our funerals, you open the casket at the end and then everybody just peels through and just takes one last look, or, you know, like pats them, or just looks at them and just says that bye. But for some reason, the funeral, it's not the undertaker, it is the funeral director. The funeral director opened the casket halfway through the ceremony. And I, for some reason, I do not know why, I was like saying, get it, close it back. I was like, close it back. And it just, I found the whole thing so hilarious. I was like doubled with grief. But like, I just found that I could not stop. Like, I was like almost crying. I was just creased up. And from the church being like, close the casket. And my mum was just lying there. And I was just like, oh my God, this is hilarious. And I still don't know why it was so funny, but it just was.
It's just, we've talked about this a lot on the show, obviously, because, you know, I do a lot of comedy. And I think partly it is like a release, you know, your body is just like, oh, I'd like a break from crying.
Yeah.
So it like grabs onto the laughter. But also it's sometimes like things are funny. You know what I mean? Things are funny. Just because it's a funeral, things don't stop being funny. Like the world doesn't behave itself. Like people still fall over. They still say the wrong thing. They get names wrong. You know, they play the wrong song. Like that, and you're just in this position where you're supposed to be so composed that I think it just becomes like a school assembly, doesn't it? It's like, you're not meant to laugh, so then it becomes even funnier because you're like, I'm supposed to be looking very noble and dignified right now, but I'm not, I'm laughing because I'm like, close her casket.
Get it,
bless
shut.
You I've told you, shut it. Yeah, oh my goodness. So what was your grandma's name? Let's make sure we get her.
So my grandma's name was Adina Daly.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I have that middle name. My name is Yessa Adina Daly Ward. Yeah. And she was in her 90s. She was 96
when she passed. Goodness.
Great innings, right? 96 when she passed in April. Yeah.
So were you in New York when she passed?
I was in New York. But you know what's really beautiful? I had a FaceTime with her, I think, either the day before or 2 days before she passed. And I knew when I saw her, I just knew. But it was such a different feeling, and I was just so happy she was out of pain. Mm. You know, I was so relieved that she was at rest. Because it's been a long innings, you know?
Yeah,
it's
been a long, 96. Long
innings, yes, yeah.
Was she in a home or was she...
No, my grandma was cooking, she was as sharp as a whistle. She was, and then she had breathing problems and you know, she'd had blood pressure and like heart issues for a while. And then, yeah, it all happened very quickly with my grandma. Yeah.
Wow.
But she'd been a creaking gait for a long time as well, like hip problems, like pain, just like general aches and pains. And then when it happened very quickly.
So she was just at home, 96, that's 96, incredible.
Yeah, went into hospital with breathing difficulties. And then I would say it would have been like a week and a little bit after when everything happened.
So what happened? Did you fly back home or you are not able to because of COVID?
Well, because of COVID, they couldn't have. So I'm the only person that's abroad, and most people are. My grandma's from Chorley in the northwest, but even the whole family couldn't be at the funeral. So we have relatives in Jamaica. So there was about, I would say, there was probably about 12 people at the funeral, which, if you know our family, is like not even... And then we were all around the world on Zooms just watching this funeral, which was so weird. Yeah. So weird. But also nice, you know, because you got to see the family and people you hadn't seen for years. And it was a lovely service. Lovely, bit awkward as well. Yeah. A bit of an awkward minister, but there you go. And and yeah, that was interesting too. It's very, very, very different to my mum's funeral. Very different not being there in the flesh. But also, I think, really fitting. And yeah, it was COVID. They were all wearing masks. And
yeah.
I guess it just speaks to the time that we're in.
Yeah, I had to attend a Zoom funeral during the first... Oh, no, I think it was like the second lockdown. And it was very strange. Like you said, I was so grateful that I could be there. And be present in a way that I didn't think I was going to be able to. But it was so... I don't know what you found. I found the actual funeral really nice. I really enjoyed that. I lit a candle next to my laptop and I felt like I'm present. The weirdest thing was when it finished and I just pressed close. And then I was like, oh, I'm just in my bedroom and like my kids were watching CBeebies and someone else, you know, my husband was like, oh, quick, like, you know, the chips are burning. We need to get the fish fingers out of the oven. And I was like... A minute ago, I was at a funeral. Like this, it was just so. It was like the transition was so fast.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's the heart. That's what I found really unsettling.
It's jarring, isn't it? It's really jarring. Yeah. I had a couple of cousins in Jamaica, and one of them was watching it in bed, but I don't think he knew that the camera was on, and so we were just seeing this like man who was in his boxers, like just. It just looked so bad. And I was so distracted, like, just, like, my eyes kept going to the corner. And he was like, and then for one part, it looked like he was, like, sleeping. And I was just like, what is happening? And I was texting my brother being like, look at, I'm not going to say the guy's name, but I was like, look at, like, such and such a person. My brother was like, what? So it was really, really, again, laughter at the most inappropriate moments.
Oh my God, that is so funny. Only of these times would someone be in their boxes watching a funeral and you're able to see them. He obviously didn't know the camera was like, he hadn't switched his camera off.
He did not know because he was like falling asleep and doing all kinds of things. It was like, it was really odd.
Were you thinking, like, could you hear your grandma like tutting at him or something?
My grandma would have been so disapproving of that kind of thing. My grandma would have been the kind of person on. She would have dressed up to go on to Zoom. She wouldn't even have liked to be on Zoom in house clothes.
Yeah.
So somebody in their boxes in bed, no way.
Oh my God, yeah, it's so weird, isn't it? Like what we've had to go through and the way that we have adapted, you know, that we have Zoom, that we can do these conversations, we can do these funerals. It's amazing, but it's also I keep thinking like, you know, about other great, like when factories were invented or something and everyone being like, "Oh, you know, like
what, do we all just have lunch at the same time? Like, how does this work? Yeah. Like, we're all sort of like having to adapt to everything all the time, being like, oh, I don't really know how this, what the etiquette for this is. It's definitely not in your boxes. You
know? No, probably not. Okay. No.
When did you get back to see your family then? Like, and was she buried? If you, like, did you get
I
to
still
to
haven't
grave?
Been back. I'll go back for Christmas. I go back for Christmas, and then at Christmas I'll be able to. There's something that new that my brothers and I want to do in terms of my mum was cremated and my grandma buried, but we want to do something for them so they can be especially in memory, just together with plaques.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that, but we want to arrange something for, because we're all away at different times. My younger brother is always there, but my older brother is around Europe and is there because of work. So we're looking forward to a time when we can be together and do some traditional things. Yeah,
definitely, especially after these bizarre last 2 years, like,
very bizarre.
Yeah. And how are you feeling, like you said at the beginning, like the connection between, you know, your grandma passing and how different it's been, like, has it brought up a lot of stuff, grief from your mum, especially at these times where we're, you know, in a lot and we're not doing our normal lives?
It's strange. The other day I wrote something about it, because as I said before, my grandma was very stoic, very capable and very tough. And, you know, it was my grandma who phoned me when my mum had died and told me. I was in London. Everybody else is from up north, you can probably hear. I'm from Lancashire. And my grandma phoned me, and in a way that only my grandma could say, she was like, yeah, and so you're not going to find her alive. In my grandma's way. And because I've been raised by this woman, I kind of understand. It was like, okay. So when I, and that was my grandma's, I always say that was my grandma's attempt at softness. My grandma was trying to say, you know, I just want you to be prepared. But, you know, in her Jamaican way, it was like, yeah, you're not going to find her alive. I was like, okay. So then, yeah, it's been interesting just going on and just kind of existing as the woman in my family who is left behind, and then all of these wonderful things about them that I can continue celebrating in myself and what they have made possible, because they came from Jamaica, both of them, with nothing. And my grandma first, and my mum came at 14, because my grandma was here a long time before my mum. And just what they did, what they sacrificed, the nights working. I get my ethic from them. They were both nurses. They both worked night shifts. My mum studied at the same time. They both did all of these wonderful things. And because of them, I have the freedom to say that I'm a writer. And, I have space, and I have a story to tell, and then also this sort of rich cultural heritage. And that is all because of them. Whatever they did or did not do, and whatever I disagreed with at the time, and whatever I thought was hard or was difficult, and I thought a lot was hard and difficult, I'm not gonna lie, but it bestowed me with so much. And I'm realizing more and more all the time that they've given me so much to work with. So many situations that were very hard that I would not have got through if they hadn't been the role models. And I mean, so much difficulty that, because of them, like, I could weather. And I've got a lot to thank them for. a lot.
Yeah, God, it's so interesting what you're saying. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to it, of, you know, that experience of being raised by people who have had to go through so much, you know, so, like, it's hard to conceive, especially, like, you know, obviously your mum must have gone through so much, but for your grandma's generation, like, to come over here and what they must have experienced, and the racism, and then working in a country that's promised so much and then isn't delivering, like, it's so, it's hard to get
around how, I think, again, maybe this is what we're talking about the maturing of, like, you can't really conceive of a tough life until you've lived a bit more of a life. So you kind of have it to compare. Like, when you're younger, you're like, oh, yeah, it was hard. But you don't, you know, you just don't know what it means for a hard life, you know, because you're like, yeah, I also don't know what to wear some days. So, like, I get it. And it's not till you've, like you said, you've been through some real, you know, past some mountains that you're like, oh, I thought that was hard. But when I look at what you went through,
yeah,
this pales in comparison. So, yeah, it's that toughness, like you said, that you, that you've inherited. And it's interesting. I wonder, I mean, this is a bit of a, like, rhetorical question, but, like, do you think you've sort of learned to, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you've learned to treasure it a bit more because they're not here. Whereas if they were still here, do you think you might still be railing and like, oh, they, you know, they're so tough, they don't know, or they don't empathize with what I'm going through? Do you think it's softened you in a way to them?
I think it must have done. I think about this sometimes and I think I wonder, what would the relationship be? One thing that I think, if I'd known everything that was gonna happen, if I'd known what, let me try and say this right. If I'd known these things were going to happen, that happened, I would have asked more questions of my mother. Mm. I would have asked my mum more questions about her life. Even the things that were hard to hear, I would have asked her. With my grandma, I had a bit longer with her and I got to ask my grandma some things. And it's so strange, I found parallels. Some of my behaviour that I thought was so outlandish, the women before me had done the same thing. They just didn't talk about them.
Yeah, so yeah.
That was interesting as well, to see what repeats. And I think that's important information to have sometimes, so you don't feel so alone and you don't feel like you're defective or like you're a lost cause or whatever. Things repeat in families, and it's only from talking about them that we know.
Yeah, it's so hard to quantify, isn't it, of like how powerful that information is. Like, I know exactly what you mean, because there's been things I found out that I'm like, oh my God, why did no one tell me that? Like, that is like really useful information. And like you said, like, you can see why people don't say things, or things are painful, or it's so far gone that they haven't noticed the repetition. I think sometimes it takes that, you know, the next generation to be like, well, no one noticed what's happening here. And they're like, you're very different. You're like, no, I think I'm doing the same thing, and I would love to know that I'm not alone in this, like you said, because otherwise you do feel like, oh, I'm broken, I'm crazy.
Sure.
You know, there's something wrong with me. And then, yeah, when you find out, like, oh, I'm not, someone else was like this.
Yes, yeah.
It's such a, like, you feel like you slot into, like, your family, don't you? It's like that jigsaw puzzle feeling. You're like, oh, yeah, I am part of something, actually. I'm part of this, like, chain of people. But why is that so important? I don't know why it's so important.
I don't know either. I think it's just such a powerful thing. When you know you belong to something, no matter how far away you go in the world, there is some footing there. There's something that grounds you, I think. And yeah, to have been part of a long line of whoever, it means something, even if it stops with you. Even if it stops with you. And it's so funny, because when people are having that great debate of whether to have children or not, and one of the questions is, you know, but then it will stop with you. And I think I'd be fine with that too. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think also I've had this conversation with my mum of like, you can only do so much work each generation. So she's like, look, she's like, you've got your complaints with me, but like, trust me, I put stop to some things that your granny did to me, but of course then I made some other mistakes, you know what I mean? So it's like, you can only, each generation is like, I've tidied up this corner of the room, it was awful, and then the other people are like, oh my God, you should have seen what was here before you, it was unbelievable. So it's like, you know, I find that sort of comforting, that because otherwise it's perfection, isn't it? You can never reach this point where you're like, I'm gonna be this perfect parent and I'll never make any mistakes, or you just make different ones. But
you do
learn from, I think, if you have that knowledge, that's why it's so helpful to know about what, you know, your mum's experience, your grandma's experience, to like sort of look back and be like,
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. And I think also it's history, isn't it, in times? Because
yes.
I think sometimes I used to judge my grandmother, my father's mother, was quite an interesting character, and I used to judge her quite harshly. But I've started thinking, God, if I had been born then and I hadn't been given any, you know, any space, any time, any respect at all, yeah, I might have been a bit grumpy. Like,
for sure.
I might have been a bit of a pain in the ass to be around. And I guess, yeah, again, you get a bit more forgiving, don't you, about the stuff that they went through. I was just wondering, like, have you found... I know you write about grief in the book a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not entirely about grief at all. It's sort of all-encompassing. But have you found yourself, since your grandma died, like, drawn to writing about her? I know you wrote that lovely thing on your blog as well about her, which I would recommend... If you haven't read Yas's work, that's a lovely place to start, because I thought that was a really beautiful piece about staying with her and her acting like you were sort of six again, you know, and you kind of willingly playing the role of like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It was always so interesting going back to my grandma's and my grandma being like, you know, everything, even when I was eating a certain diet, my grandma would be like, go on, have a biscuit, or have this, what do you mean you're vegan, you know, have this, have that. And it's always like the stepping into a time capsule, just being in that, because nothing much had ever changed in my grandma's house, you know. The pictures of Jesus, sort of the ornaments, the willow patterns, crockery, and I have this soft spot for Pyrex dishes and willow pattern crockery, because it's just home. It's just those formative years, and, you know, bringing things from the garden that my grandma and granddad had grown, and cooking with those things will always be close to my heart.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you as well, in terms of faith, so they were very religious.
Yes.
Have you felt like... I don't know what your faith is, but like, has that been affected by what you've been through? Or,
I mean, I grew up knowing the Bible backwards, and like, I mean, all the way. I went to church for years and years, and this is the kind of church where Bible study was really Bible study. Mm. I mean, like, dissertation level every week, every Saturday, and it was all day. And now I'm not religious, and that. But the spirituality just doesn't go. There's a religion to a lot of things that I do, down to meditation, how I take my walks every single morning, how I clean the house, the kind of things I think about. I still sing hymns when I'm cleaning the house. And there's things that will just never, ever go. And just a deep appreciation for all the things on this planet. And I mean, like, just the art of noticing, like, flowers, trees. That's never going to go. And that's got to be from my grandparents. And the prayer that we would... I mean, they used to make us pray for hours. But there's something about that it goes into my work. You know, it finds its way in the diligence. In, like, I'm not diligent with loads of things. But, like, when I am, I think it's that. I think it's that.
Yeah, you can't erase that kind of dedication, I guess. You know, like you said, I think it's interesting you're saying, like, you know, that level of spirituality, you know, yeah, you can remove yourself from an institution, or you can not spend all Saturday reading the Bible, which, you know, like, must be nice to have a break from the Saturdays of doing that.
That sounds
really intense. But you can't take... I mean, it sounds stupid, but it's almost like you can, you know, take the girl out of trolley, but you can't. It's like, it's innate, isn't it? Yeah.
It's true. When I was eight, I found out that, not to get into another person, because I know we're finishing, but when I was eight, I found out that my dad died, and I'd never met him. He was in Nigeria. My mum came home and told me one day, and my granddad just put his hand on my shoulder as he was leaving the room, and he just went, oh, well, girl, you can't miss what you never had. And of course, that's not strictly true, but no. That philosophy that my grandparents kind of had was, come up, like, well, it's kind of stuck with me my whole life, the way that they would see something very difficult and be like, well, and we have to carry on. And it's kind of how I viewed it when my grandma died. It's kind of really, in a strange way, because it's not always useful, but it's kind of helped me through some very difficult moments of my life.
Yeah, I can relate. My mum's side are Cockney, Essex, like working class, and they are very like, well, there you go. What are you going to do?
That's what mum said.
If you don't laugh, you'll cry. And it's like, yeah, well, then maybe you'll cry. And I know as I've got older, I've suddenly, I this is again that attitude of thinking, that how healthy is that attitude? But I really appreciate that I had it. Because I definitely have noticed, like, I don't know if you've had this, of like, sometimes I'll see a peer or a friend in a situation where they're like, oh my goodness. And I think, yeah, you just gotta get on with it. And that kind of toughness, that real, which sometimes I can see people like, oh, that's quite cold and tough. And you're like, yeah, it is. But also get over it and get on with it. Like, brush yourself down. Come on, let's do it. And I think it's about sort of, yeah, making sure that it's not your entire philosophy, I suppose, isn't it? Like, there could be a danger to it being like you wed yourself to it and then like you forget sometimes actually I need to be decadent or celebrate or breathe. But there's definitely a kind of like, it's not always the worst thing in the world to just go, yeah, oh well, come on.
I think it's about having both, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's about having both, and some things you don't take too seriously, even when they are serious. And then sometimes you let yourself cry and you let yourself break down. And I think health is sort of bouncing between them. Yes. And then you find your medium. You find your space.
Definitely. And I think that's the thing of like, you know, my grandparents' generation, there was no bouncing. There was all get over it. Get over it. What do you want? What do you want? A badge? Get over it. And that's what I mean about like this, as the generations go by, you can be like, yeah, but also time for crying. But also we're allowed to like have a day we don't feel great. So yeah, I think that's super important. Yeah, so thank you so much for talking
to
me.
Thank you. This has been wonderful.
It was so lovely. It was so, so lovely. And the book is beautiful. And it does, as you know, it does talk about grief. Don't worry, guys. there's stuff on death. Listeners, you can still enjoy it. Thank you very much for remembering Marcia and Adina.
Thank you.
You can follow Yersa on Twitter at Yersa Daily Ward. That's YRSADALEYWARD. And her book, The How, Notes on the Great Work of Meeting Yourself, is out now. And it's absolutely brilliant. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was recorded remotely, me in London, Yersa in New York. It was edited by Kate Holland. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. And this is the last episode of this season. Thank you so much for listening, especially if you listen all the way to the end. This is a special, special thank you for those people who do that. Hi, hope you're okay. Hope Christmas goes okay. Or if you're celebrating it or not celebrating it, I just hope it's as bearable as is possible in these situations. And thank you for being so brilliant. You are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.